coming in a little bit later, but we need to get started because we have, as usual, a really packed agenda. And so I'd just like to start by welcoming you all and to let you know that Tammy Gray, who's the other co-chair, she's in Taiwan doing a Taiwanese exchange program, so she won't be here today. And it's really exciting to see that we have a lot of guests participating with us. And so I'd just like to start by that welcome, and if we can go around, and if you're a Health Improvement Plan Committee member, we're taking a roll call. My name's Lila Wickham. And I'll pass the microphone to you so that the people on the phone can hear.
I'm Dan Munoz from Pacific University.
Hi, thank you.
My name is Sarah Beth Weiner Coulter.
And just to be clear, the roll call is for the Health Improvement Plan Committee members so that we have that on record.
Right. I'm not a member of just letting you know. That's what Sarah was just saying.
Thank you.
Good morning, Rachel Banks.
Keith Barton.
Rhonda Busick.
Heidi Pierce.
Good morning, Sally Norby.
Chris Cable.
Susan Pinkman.
Paul Kaiser.
Lori Trieger.
Alejandro Queral.
Larry Wallach.
Jill Fuglister.
Ginny Ehrlich.
Laura Sisolak.
Thank you very much. And we have on the phone, is it Don?
Don Brolin.
Anyone else on the phone? Okay, great. Thank you very much. So, just a reminder, we only have one person on the phone now. Later we might be having two others joining us for the population health discussion. So when you speak, if you could please use the microphone and state your name so that we have, so that the phone participants have a clear view of what's going on, that would be great. So our next task is to review the meeting notes from May 14th and make any corrections. People are reviewing. So while everybody is finishing that up, I just want to mention that this is a public meeting, and we have four people who are signed up to give public testimony, so that's really exciting. And that happens later on in the agenda, and you are certainly welcome to stay throughout the day and listen to the discussion. So I just wanted to make that that opportunity clear. And so, can we have a motion to approve the minutes?
So moved.
Second?
Second.
All in favor? Great, thank you very much. So now, onto the meat of our discussion today. We have three invited guests, and Mel Cohn, Kathleen O'Leary, and Lillian Shirley. And Lillian is our liaison to the Oregon Health Policy Board. She's also the administrator of the Health Department for Multnomah County. Kathleen O'Leary is the chair of the Conference of Local Health Officials and the administrator of the Public Health Department in Washington County. And Mel Cohn is the director of the Health Division. And they're going to present to us the current public health system, some of the strengths and challenges, and a view into the future from the Oregon Health Policy Board perspective.
Sorry.
That's okay. So I'm going to just slide in here. I'm Ursula Rosenrunge. I'm with Strategic Learning Resources, and I'm helping facilitate this committee. And I want to just quickly orient people, including all our guests, as to sort of where we are in our process. We're actually at our fifth meeting. We've had meetings in Salem, Portland, Pendleton, and Medford. And we're in an information gathering stage and really beginning to also really think about how we begin to synthesize all of this with a goal of having sort of the big overarching recommendations to go to the Healthcare Policy Board by the end of our meeting on June 25th. So, pace is picking up, and I'm imagining we've got some committee members saying, how are we going to do that? But have no fear. I wanted to just really quickly review the agenda for today so people sort of know what's both what's on it and what to expect. We've got, as Lila said, we're starting with a presentation about the public health system, which is really a result of committee members asking for a better orientation, both in terms of roles and responsibilities of public health, local and state, as well as funding and how that all works. We're going to follow that with dividing the committee up into small groups and having a very structured small group discussions around funding, both principles that people would like to start to bring forward, and some of the bigger strategies that the group has been talking about in pieces, but really have a focused discussion on that. The full group discussion about what we've heard from the small groups will go on through lunch, and there will be a real break in that too. It doesn't show up on the agenda, but I want to assure committee members there will be a real break where you'll be able to use the bathrooms, which, by the way, are all the way down. We get our lock in on the right, okay, and time for cell phone, etc. Lunch will be in this room. And after that discussion, we'll get a very brief briefing from the two community listening sessions that we had. We had one last night in Hillsboro and one at ERCO here in Portland. And Rachel and Alejandro will be sort of leading that discussion for us. Then we're bringing back a proposal around and a discussion around definition of population health and the metrics for that, going back to your suggestions in the survey, and Jane will be leading that discussion. Then we have a guest. This is the only stakeholder testimony we have today, which is Barbara Pro from the Governor's Wellness Initiative, and then following that we'll be open for public comment. So any questions about what we're up to today? Great.
So you want to use that mic? Or you want to use this mic?
It doesn't come out of the...
Okay.
Thank you. Good morning. Thank you so much for inviting us here this morning to talk about
the public health system here in Oregon. It's a real pleasure to be here. And I'd like to let you know that the work that you're doing on this committee is generating lots of thought, conversations. You're really challenging us in lots of ways to think about what it is that we do, how things are going to be changing here in Oregon, and how we participate as the public health system, improving the public's health. So thank you very much both for the invitation and for your work. You're making a difference on lots of levels, even though it's a little bit dispersed at this point in time. So you're gonna change slides for me. The 1988 Institute of Medicine report on the future of public health was really a bellwether publication for us, and the definition of public health that we still use today actually comes from there, and I think it's important on a number of levels because it's really what we do together, not unlike the work that you're doing in this committee, the work that we do together to assure that there's conditions for people to be healthy. So what is public health? Again, out of this publication, they define the core functions of public health: policy development, assessment, policy development, and assurance. Since then, there's been additional work to define what we call the 10 essential services, which actually fit under these three core functions. But this is really what public health is about. So when we think about that, we think about the community as our client. Used in an obesity example here, providers, healthcare providers, see individual patients or clients and diagnose and treat them and work to improve their health. Public health, however, asks, what's the impact of obesity to the health? Health overall, health of our residents, other complicating factors in terms of health, and more importantly, how can it be prevented? What can we do to really get to primary prevention, looking upstream? So we gather data, we assess the situation. What is that larger picture? We monitor the trends. Is this going up, down, staying the same? Identify what are the risk factors. So what contributes to people becoming obese? We convene partners to listen. What do we need to hear from our communities around this issue? To teach, what did we learn in terms of the data that we bring to the table? And to develop prevention action plans. Sound a little familiar in terms of the work that you're doing on this committee? That really is a public health function. Developing prevention policies and then advocating for change. In the last session, menu labeling was a piece that was a policy issue in front of the legislature, looking at policies both locally and at the state level around the built environment, looking at transportation, looking at zoning laws, looking at how we put structure and policy in place. And then evaluating the impact of strategies and disseminating those results. That's a really important public health piece. To evaluate the results and then to let folks know what that looks like. You know, when Mel and I started on these parts of the slides, our idea was I'll start off because I'll talk about the local piece and then hand it off to Mel to talk about the state piece. And when we went to put the content together, we're really integrated on lots of levels. So actually this is going to be a little bit more interactive back and forth between Mel and I, because it wasn't easy to separate it out by venue in order to make the content make more sense. So what's our track record in public health? Since 1900, on average about 30 years have been added to life expectancy in the United States. And about 25 of those years are attributed to public health measures, not individual care, healthcare issues. So looking at vaccination, safe food and water, family planning, control of communicable diseases, tobacco prevention and control, motor vehicle and workplace safety, those bigger population pieces looking at community interventions and good policy development is really what has made the difference for longevity. Seatbelt laws. Tobacco prevention and control. This is the work that really makes the difference in terms of improving the public's health and adding to longevity. So looking at the system, particularly looking at the governmental system, Centers for Disease Control and Prevention in Atlanta, the feds as we call them, state public health, and local health departments. And we really do weave our work together, thinking about a vaccine campaign. H1N1, of course, was the most recent. At the local level, we really knew our communities. We knew how to get vaccine to the folks at that were most vulnerable in the priority populations. We knew who to work with locally. We could, in fact, mount very effective local campaigns. We couldn't do that, however, without the feds in terms of their guidance and providing vaccine. And we really couldn't do that without the state providing the technical assistance, having that overall convening role across all of the counties in Oregon to come up with shared goals, to come up with systems that facilitated the work, to be able to work with other state partners around the campaign. It really was very much integrated in a woven system in order for folks to get vaccine. So we are government, and there are laws that contribute to our practice. The governing boards in each county actually are the Board of Health and the local public health authority. It's an interesting piece because most county commissioners don't run to be a county commissioner thinking I'm going to be the local public health authority and the Board of Health. Public health is not just a metro area, that it really is a statewide approach for basic public health services which to promote and preserve health. That the state, in partnership with counties, is charged to maintain and improve public health services. And that all public funds to be used for local public health services have to be agreed upon with the local public health authority or with the conference of local health officials. And a current example of that is there's some stimulus money from the federal government and the Governor's Worksite Wellness Initiative. And so state staff are working on this initiative and working very closely with the Conference of Local Health Officials to identify where will that get started, what counties will we start in, and then working with the local public health authority in the counties where they're actually going to initiate the beginnings of this particular campaign. So it's really woven all the way across. We have statutory responsibilities, and you'll see that these really are very broad. Administer and enforce the public health rules and laws at both the local level and state level. We're required to submit an annual plan that assesses our community and comes up with action steps, and that goes to the Oregon Health Authority by May 1st, and assure activities to preserve health or prevent disease. Piece that's not there is also about reporting, and we also have reporting obligations to the state and therefore they get passed on to the federal government. So in statute, there are services in order to be the local public health authority that we actually need to provide. So this is a more concrete list of what we expect in Oregon for each local public health authority, in fact, to be the local public health authority. So if there were a county or a district that said, I don't have enough funding for TB case management, I'm going to give that back to the state. The question back would be, in order to be the local public health authority, this is the list of services that you, as that authority, need to be able to provide in your jurisdiction. Right, the state piece? Also laws around state public health, the Oregon Health Authority, and really it is that larger oversight across the entire state, supervising all matters related to the preservation of life and health of Oregonians. So the whole vital records system, so that we have those statistics and can do planning based on that. Investigating causes of communicable diseases, preventing disease, especially epidemics, enforcing laws and policies and rules, and making sure that public health laws are in fact being executed across the entire state. So state public health interacts with all of the local public health administrators around making sure that this in fact is happening statewide. So who are we? Who is this public health workforce? Mostly nurses, particularly at the local level. The largest part of the public health workforce are nurses. But the real benefit around public health is that we're multidisciplinary. Again, it is what we all do together to do this work that makes the difference. So environmental health specialists, epidemiologists, health educators, statisticians, administrators. But really, that interdisciplinary work is the strength of the workforce for public health. Funding, folks always want to know a little bit about funding. This is a slide that's a little bit hard to read. At the state level, there's about $55 million that is distributed to local public health. And you can see the biggest chunk of this pie is federal funding. There's a smaller section for state general fund, and then I think they refer to those as other funds. For example, the tobacco tax revenues are considered actually other funds, but there's other pieces that are in that. So this is an annual amount, by the way, not a biennial amount. And that's what gets distributed out across counties, like I said, mostly federal funds. This one's a little bit more complicated. So if you sit where I do at the county and look up and try to look at our funding sources, it's a little bit more varied. You'll see that. This piece here actually is state and federal, and they're lumped together because it's a little bit difficult to tease them out as cleanly as our state partners are able to do. Part of that is because there's some Medicaid match in there, there's federal money, there's that sliver of state general fund in there. So this is just a little bit harder to pull out exactly what is state and what is federal when you look at it at the county level. The bigger chunk, of course, is county general fund. We have fees and donations. We do bill for Medicaid. We do bill insurances. We do write grants. There's a variety of ways that we're funded at the local level.
Could I just add to that?
Yes.
There's an enormous
I just want to add to that there's an enormous variation in terms of the amount of county general fund from county to county. There are some that get zero, and there are others, Multnomah being a great example, where there's a substantial investment of county general fund. So that's sort of an average that you saw on the slide. I just wanted to make sure that you had a sense for the breadth of that.
Yeah, thank you. We'll take questions at the end. The other thing is that it's very complicated to figure out sort of what that range really looks like, because counties, not like businesses, do follow accounting practices, but how we set up our budgets is different from county to county. And so some counties consider rent and square footage as county general fund, and others don't. And so it really varies both in terms of what counties do. Some do primary care, some do jail health services, others don't. So when we look at the county general fund contribution, it's really very difficult to quantify that in a way that you could compare from county to county. Most counties put county general fund in their budgets. So what's the strengths of this bifurcated state and local system? Well, we both have responsibility and accountability. We are influential and responsive to our governments, both state governments and local governments. We really have complementary and interdependent roles. None of us could do this work without the other. The workforce is distributed across the state, and that's a significant strength. At the state level, that advocacy and partnering with other state agencies and that leading up to the federal government, and at the local level, that connection and responsiveness to communities in order to actually do that work on the ground. And we have some challenges. Capacity at both state and local level is a significant issue. You saw how little state general fund there is actually in public health here in Oregon, and that's a significant issue. So how do you have the capacity, the leadership, the skill development? How do you grow practice? How do you change practice when capacity is such an issue? It's a complicated political landscape, and there's lots of partners. So that interaction between politics at the state level and the local level, the politics from county to county, very, very complicated. In Washington County, we are part of the metro area, and people think of us sort of as a monolith, but the politics in Multnomah County and Washington County and Clackamas County are really very, very different. So lots of players, boards of county commissioners, state government, our legislators all add to the complication of that mix. Wide variation in county engagement and general funds to public health. So there isn't an expected floor around what that looks like from county to county. And in order for this system to be effective, we absolutely have to work as a system and be really good partners. And with all of these pieces as challenges, that makes that ever more important and in fact, ever more challenging.
Thanks. I know this is a lot of information, but I think you need that background for the work that you all are charged with doing. So thank you for giving me and Kathleen and, the opportunity to participate today. I want to talk a little more concretely about some of the major needs that we have as a system. The first is that we're pretty spotty in terms of addressing the leading causes of morbidity and mortality. We do a pretty good job, especially in a crisis, of addressing the communicable disease challenges we face. I don't want to say that we're perfect or that we have no needs in that area. But compared to these other major drivers like chronic disease prevention, environmental exposures, unintentional and violent injuries, which are the last category, injuries are the leading cause of death for people between the ages of 1 and 44. There's comparatively much less activity going on at the local level, and at the state level as well. Our infrastructure, we have a little bit more in each of these areas, but it's also very thin and frayed. So how do we, as we transform the system, figure out how to get the resources at the state and local level to do the job around this? Second is addressing needs created by changing demographics. And we have an aging population. That means some very important things in terms of, for example, chronic disease risk, that we have to be addressing the needs of the folks who are out there today, not the ones who are out there 50 years ago. And so that means that we need to change how we think about and structure our work and the activities we're involved in. And certainly we have seen a lot of increasing racial and ethnic diversity here in Oregon. We have a variety of very serious health disparities that are a huge issue. And I should say, racial and ethnic diversity and disparities, I want to draw the circle a little broader than that as well. Just to give you a concrete example, in the tobacco world, I've seen this figure that 44% of the cigarettes that are smoked in the United States are smoked by people with chronic mental illness. So if we're really going to make a difference in terms of tobacco prevention, how do we address that segment of the population? That requires some special focus, attention, and skills. Workforce and leadership development, we're kind of in a transformational place as a system, I would say. I hope we're in a transformational place. I guess transformation could go either in a good direction or a bad direction, but we're certainly in a place of a great deal of change. And do we have the workforce and leadership skills that we need to do that? A lot of the issues around, just to take chronic disease prevention for example, relate to building community coalitions, interacting with the political structure in your community and at the state level. That's a different set of skills from the clinical skills that many of our practitioners have. I mean, Kathleen mentioned that we do have a lot of nurses in the workforce. There are not very many physicians. At the State Health Department, we have fewer than 20 physicians on our staff out of a staff of a little over 700 people. So how are we going to interact with the medical care system where physicians, you know, like to hear from physicians if we don't have those kinds of skills? Our health officer structure around the state is extremely thin. Some of our counties, for example, have fewer than, 2 to 4 hours a month of health officer time. They're meeting the obligation that's in statute, but that's not really enough to drive that kind of link in an effective way. How do we build that in a way that really supports the system? Structuring funding to promote policy goals, I think, is a very important part of this. You all are gonna be talking, I think, a lot about policy goals, and then aligning our funding structures to drive those policy goals is a key opportunity for us. The family planning program that is run through the Public Health Division and many local health departments participate as well, that program is successful in large part because we get a 9-to-1 federal match. For every dollar of state general fund that's invested in that program, we get 9 federal dollars additional to add to the pot. So that's a pretty potent driver for, from a big picture point of view, it's bringing money in and services into the state, and we need to think about how do we use those kinds of tools to accomplish the different policy goals that we have. And finally, accreditation. This is a national process that's going on, and we are just beginning to grapple with what we need to do to figure out how to get accredited. It's still voluntary, but probably somewhere down the road, it's going to be more and more a condition of funding from both federal partners and also perhaps from the foundation world and the private sector. So there are some real opportunities and challenges, and that's why this is a really exciting time to be involved in this work. I'm going to talk about each of these in turn. So first, in terms of the health authority, I apologize, this slide is a little bit blurry, but I think you all have the hard copy, and you're probably familiar with this already. The whole restructuring of the state part of the public health system and inclusion in the public health authority is really an attempt to address a lot of the needs that I just described. We want to leverage the clinical pieces that are in state government. When you add up all of the purchasing of health insurance, for example, that's done across the state, I believe it's either a quarter or a third. Lillian, perhaps you know the answer to that.
800,000 covers lives.
Right, so that's
out of 3.5 million.
Yeah, 800,000 covered lives out of 3.5 million people. That is a lot of purchasing power, and that can be a lever to drive some of the things we're talking about. Integration of behavioral and mental health into the physical health realm. And public health also getting in the mix there, helping to guide that so that we're really improving population health and not just spending money on a service, because that's what we've always done. So I think the creation of the health authority is an opportunity for us to restructure what we do and to shake things up a little bit and look at things differently. This slide, very briefly, it's a rather complicated slide, just to give you a sense that in the Department of Human Services, there's about $15 billion that's spent. The vast majority of it, it's a little over 40%, is for medical assistance programs. This is largely the Medicaid program. Now, the human services programs are these two chunks here are also very big. You'll see that the public health component here is actually even smaller than the administrative services component for the department. So, you know, this is a major challenge for us. Next, please.
What is the amount of the public health component, dollar amount?
Back up, I believe, I want to give you the number that's on here. It's about $500 million. Is that right? Can you see it on your sheet?
I have it,
but
what's your budget? That's the answer.
It's a little over $500 million, but the vast majority of that is federal funds. Less than 10% of the public health division's budget comes from state general fund. So there's a lot of money out there in the system, but how are we spending it, and how do we leverage that in ways that are going to be more effective?
510,
thank you, Lily. This is a budget piece that shows really all of the money that's in the health care piece here, $10.26 billion. Now, for this graph, public health is included in here, whether you consider it health care or not. This is part of the transformation that I think we're undergoing. How do we talk about and think about ourselves in respect to the rest of the healthcare system? But again, just to emphasize this point, $10 billion, a lot of money here in Oregon, of which public health, $510 million, a very, very small piece of that right now. Next. So I want to talk a little bit about federal health reform. There's a lot of detail out there, and I've tried to highlight in yellow the really key points that I want to make sure you all grasp. First, in terms of population health, this has been historic. A historic investment and focus on improving population health. A very large investment in prevention and public health, unprecedented for us, perhaps with the exception of some of the monies that came for terrorism after 9/11 and with flu. But still, nonetheless, thinking about prevention and public health, huge, huge potential there. A lot of pieces of this, many of which are still being worked out. There's the creation of a prevention and wellness fund, and how exactly those dollars are going to be used, there's a lot of discussion going on at the national level right now. So I can't give you specific details about that. A couple of other things that I think will be really important for you to know. The creation of a National Prevention Health Promotion and Public Health Council and a national strategy for prevention public health. We've never had that before. I mean, we have Healthy People 2010, 2020, some of you have seen that big, thick book. This is a really different approach, and I think reflects the new focus on this prevention and wellness. There's some money about data collection related to health disparities and research on optimizing the delivery of public health services. There's a huge diversity, not only across Oregon in terms of our local public health departments, but across the country in terms of local and state public health departments. How are they set up? What really is the best way to do that? That's a kind of core organizational question that we've never been able to answer, and I hope in a few years we'll have some more information that will help us with that. A workforce development, we've talked on a little bit in terms of the needs that we have. Next, around coverage and access, by 2014, there will be an individual mandate in place that requires insurance coverage for all citizens. There are a few exceptions to that. It's phased in. I'm not going to go into all of the details around that. But this is a game changer for many of the services that we provide, because to take the family planning program, for example, if everybody's got health insurance that includes coverage for family planning services, why do we need a family planning program? Now, this is not going to be, it's not going to happen in one fell swoop. There's going to be transition. I'm sure there will be holes. There's a lot of question about how this is going to roll out. But clearly, the focus of the program is going to need to change from providing those family planning services into something new. And what should that be? Those are the kinds of questions we're grappling with across the system. And then down here, under delivery system reform, increasing experimentation with new models of payment and care delivery. I mentioned to you this Prevention and Wellness Fund. By 2014, That fund will be getting $2.5 billion a year that will be distributed around the country in a variety of ways yet to be described. That sounds like a lot of money. Well, there's $940 billion a year that's going into the health care side from this very same bill. And how do we leverage that and think about new ways of reimbursement and delivering care that will help us on the population health end of the spectrum? So huge opportunity with new money coming into the system like that. In terms of timeline, again, a lot of detail here. The implementation of all of this is happening. It's starting now, happening really quite quickly. Some of the milestones, this development of a national quality improvement strategy is an important one. The disparities data collection by 2012, there are going to be some new requirements in place about what data we collect, and so that we will hopefully be able to address disparities better. Next, please. Quite a bit about payment, and of course in 2014, as I mentioned already, the requirement going into place that all citizens have health insurance. Next. So I think a lot going on. You know, a few years may seem like a long time, but for this kind of transformation, this is astounding. And for me, as a public health practitioner, I think the core challenge that we face, if there was one I had to give you that I really hope you will keep, you know, not paste it to your forehead, I don't know, on the inside of your glasses or something, for those of you who wear glasses, is this issue about how do we shift the focus from this incredible focus on medical care, which, as it turns out, really, you know, contributes only about 10% to better health outcomes, as compared with all of these other pieces that really are this public health and population based. How do we make that transformation happen in a responsible and constructive way? So that, I think, is a huge thing to think about, and overlays all of the work that we're doing. And I think, Lillian, I'm going to turn over to you now.
Thank you. There's been just a slight mix-up. Can you go ahead a couple slides, and then we'll come back to this one? Keep going. Go. This one. Uh-huh. Okay. So my job here this morning is just to kind of take a leap into how does all this work, you know, get dumped in to the Oregon Policy Board and their recommendations. And I'm just going to try and give you a little bit of the roadmap of where we're going. I think it's important what Mel said, that one of the first articulations that we had as the Oregon Health Policy Board was working with this new entity in the state, the Oregon Health Authority, and to just say, you know, given the fact that House Bill 2009 and the Oregon Health Fund Board has been very clear that they want all of the work that's being done in Oregon to be framed up under the concept of the triple aim. You know, so what does that mean for all of these pieces that you saw on the pie charts, you know, of all the complexity of what is going on in state government now, from, you know, paying for family planning, paying for adult and disability services, and doing core public health surveillance. So how can we align that? And these are the three goals that have come up for the Oregon Health Authority: to improve lifelong health of Oregonians, to increase the quality, the reliability, and the availability of care for all Oregonians, and to lower or contain the cost of care so it's affordable to everyone. So if you look at all the programs and all the committees that have been kind of generated or spawned, if you will, from this work around health reform and transformation, we really think that you can articulate what they contribute to each of these goals for Oregonians in kind of plain language. Okay, so we go back to, So the vision, and this is actually taken from a community process on the other side of the mountains, and I think that it really does make us think beyond our own professional ways of looking at things to get to those goals for all Oregonians. So
We want to enhance the patient experience. We want to improve the health of Oregonians and reduce capital costs, per capita costs. So most of the work that we're trying to do, I think, in this committee and that we're trying to do with all of the prevention and wellness focus on the community level really fits under the second part of the goal. And one of the things that we've kind of come to a conclusion on the Oregon Health Policy Board is that a lot of the health reform indicators that Mel identified around who's going to get covered, when they're going to get covered, the feds are looking at benefit packages and all the issues around insurance reform that were such a part of the debate in Oregon through the Fund Board and House Bill 2009. You know, we're kind of saying, you know, the feds kind of took care of that, you know, so we'll just, you know, wait and see what they say about benefit packages and see if we want to do more here or when we want to go. But the real challenge, the kind of the intellectual and leadership challenge for us as Oregonians, I think, is on these other two levels. You know, how do we really transform the system to be much more upstream and much more community-based? And what are some of the drivers that we have to do that? And to think of our partners in this, wherever we sit, that starts from chambers and business development organizations, that each of these kind of circles, you know, really contribute to having a healthy Oregon, and really to think through, you know, how do we knit all that together, both from the point of view of regulations, because we are government, to incentives, and how do we incentivize people to move in that direction. Next slide. Some of the changing organization of care that we're looking at as kind of goals is to stimulate innovation, looking at new structures for supporting fundamental change, linking informal networks to provide care. And the devil's obviously in the detail here, because everybody says, okay, so who gets the money? You know, if you're linking those networks to get to the outcomes. Accountability and joint responsibility for keeping people healthy, and comprehensive performance measurement, focusing on quality and outcomes. And I think that, you know, I think that this is an important kind of setting the table to think about what is the role of a health improvement plan and core public health in achieving these goals. You know, and it isn't really, and my brain doesn't go right away to kind of specific programs, but more how do we keep track of the assessment? How do we keep track of the you know, the barriers and some of the things that we've heard in our listening sessions here, some of the issues for different communities. Rather than programming, how do we like really make sure and that we track these changes to make sure that we're having not just the assessment piece but also the accountability piece? And what is the role of public health in that? Next slide. So this is comes from the Public Health Institute, and it's not a new slide, but it's a I personally like it a lot because it reminds me kind of, you know, where are all the places that we have to be thinking about, and to not just get stuck in one bubble or one line to understand, you know, how things can come together to really make that system change, that delivery system change, that also includes things in the environment around governance and relationships. Issues around global budgeting. I mean, Mel talked about what's going to happen to family planning dollars, you know. Well, you know, maybe systems or communities should just get, you know, we should add up all the money that's being paid out now and just say, okay, this is how much you have. Here, go for it, you know. And some communities might be more focused on spending more in making sure the built environment is the built environment is, you know, more open to promoting healthy activity and welcoming around zoning laws around what exactly kind of stores and what kind of vendors you allow into communities and parks. But then at the same time, thinking about, well, in our community, we really need to take these dollars and really address persistent homelessness and persistent mental illness in our community. So, you know, and how does that happen on the local level? Only because you'll be able to assess and know and have the data to know what is going on in your community and what are your priorities to do that. Next slide. Oh, that's That was the one that was out of order. Okay, so this should say draft timeline and next steps for, because there's nothing set in stone, and I was very nervous when I saw that the draft was off of this slide. But so just want to share with you how the Oregon Health Policy Board is teeing up some of the work to get to the conclusion and our recommendations to the legislature. So this is a little busy, but basically what you're seeing here is the deliverables, because our process meetings are kind of over now. The deliverables are on the one side, and the educational sessions are on the other side. These are all open to the public, both the educational sessions and the meetings. So if you are interested in attending the June meeting, we will be dealing with administrative simplification, which is the report out of recommendations for how to do administrative simplification here in the state of Oregon, and the Health Information Oversight Council. And we won't be voting on that. We'll review the summary of their strategic plan and their process for a stakeholder. We've already heard from them once, and we want to make sure that they're moving right along. The meetings are always on the second Tuesday of the month, and on the Monday and Tuesday prior to that, we have a webinar, an educational webinar. So this week it's going to be on the background and the survey results for administrative simplification. Because they did, interestingly enough, a little preview here, but they did an amazing survey of all the insurers as well as providers, and really got a sense of, you know, what would you actually in a practice be willing to do or not do, you know, for administrative simplification, including how would you be willing to combine forms and things like that. So in July, we'll be looking at the essential benefit package recommendations and endorse a draft. The problem with this is because we're not in sync with the federal timeline. So we have to be really flexible for that and know where are the issues that might overlap. We also have to have funding recommendations for all this. So one of the examples is in the Oregon legislature, people are saying that to expand coverage, we would say that up to 8% of a person's income would be the ceiling that you would have to pay to purchase insurance. But the Fed said 5%. So, you know, it's like, who's gonna pay for the gap? You know, the feds will help support it up to 5%. So part of the decision for our legislature is, here in Oregon, you know, do we want to provide subsidies for people up to 8% of their income being to purchase insurance? So those are the kind of little devil in the detail things that need to be worked out. We also will be looking at the health improvement plan and the first look at the draft comprehensive plan for all of these areas, including payment reform, incentives, health information technology. And the webinars before that will be basically two, but I just want to draw your attention. We will have Mel and Kathleen will be presenting as a webinar to the Oregon Health Policy Board and to any members who want to do it. Basically the same thing that you saw this morning in terms of the complexity of the system as it is for governmental public health, to let people know about that. Next slide. So in August, we get our draft business plan for health insurance exchange. And you know, you can just see through here the same set of methodology. But all of these, this is like really, if you want to tune in October, one of the most important things that I think actually will impact how your recommendations get fund it, because that's definitely got to be one of the questions, is the Incentives and Outcomes Committee, which is the really payment reform and quality, and that's one of the very key pieces of health reform here in Oregon. Next slide. And then moving all the way in to our legislative preview, the interesting thing is we understand that we will have a different governor when we meet in November. So that's, you know, part of our landscape to think about and look and prepare for, regardless of what happens, you know, and working with the legislature before and after that to make sure that they are apprised steps along the way of how we're doing our work as a policy board. And then in January, next slide, we'll do our 11 to 13 strategic plan. which will basically be focusing on implementing the work that has come up to the December meeting, including things like the health information exchange, health insurance exchanges, and things like that. So that's all I have. That was my job. But I do want to encourage you, I mean, this, I'm going to take a time for a commercial while we're, I'm handing off the microphone. I do want to encourage people to keep track of the work of the policy board and the outcomes and what is the discussion, because, you know, you can influence it along the way, and it's really important to be aware that this is how a lot of the traditional decisions that we've had around lobbying and groups getting together, a lot of those decisions will show up in this process, and it's a whole new way of us thinking about how do we, not only as professionals, but as citizens, you know, get the product that was the kind of blue sky dream of House Bill 2009.
Thank you, Mel, Lillian, and Kathleen. So we have about 15 minutes for questions, and I know that there were already some burgeoning questions out there, but what we're hoping that you can try to focus on are the questions that are in your agenda, and the presenters did a really good job of sort of laying out the landscape for the legislative process. But in thinking through your questions...
They don't like it.
Oh, sorry. I thought it was on your agenda. I'll read them to you. They are, what is the legislative landscape? What are possible new opportunities for primary prevention funding? What is available for potential leveraging of prevention resources in the next 5 years? Because those are the things that we as a committee are supposed to be pushing forward as part of our plan. And thank you for presenters for doing such a good job of kind of teeing up that conversation by having that content in your materials. Just one mention, just want to mention that Sansere Bonnell is here, as is Carlos Crespo, and we, you all missed the part where we were checking in, so I just want to make sure that that record showed that you're present.
All right, good, thank you.
We're here, Carlos.
Carlos is here, but is he really present?
Yeah. So we had some questions, I know, on this side.
Yes, Alejandro Corral. Thank you, everybody, for those that presentation. Really informative. I wasn't aware that we were limited or trying to focus on those sets of questions. I'm going to try to frame my question around
you're
that.
Not.
But but anyway, I won't comment further. But the question that I have is: this committee at least has paid, and I don't want to put it in this necessarily in this terms, or But we've paid at least lip service to this question about, you know, what are the social determinants of health and how do we address them? But we really haven't focused on that question. And so, you know, my question then is, where do you see opportunities within the current public health system that would begin to address some of those root causes? Because the focus has really been on the behavioral end and the connections to the distribution of resources that will allow the creation of communities that, you know, are healthier and so forth, but where are those opportunities in the public health system, or do they not exist? And then the question is, what structural changes would we need to focus on to be able to begin to address those issues?
Public health.
I've got a couple ideas. Go ahead.
So first, I would say that I think this is relatively new territory for the public health system, and we're still figuring this out. So I'll share with you some ideas I have, but they are by no means, you know, the be-all and the end-all. And I don't know whether they're going to be the same ones
okay.
you say, Kathleen, or not. Be interesting to see. So going back to this kind of assessment, policy development, and assurance framework from the IOM report in 1988, on the assessment end, there's a lot of work that we can do in public health uniquely to shine a light on this issue. What are the social determinants that matter? Who's being affected by them? And what are the mechanisms, to the extent that we can describe that, through which that's occurring? The second is the policy development arena. And here I think things get a little trickier for us because most of the policies that are related to the social determinants of health are not ones that, well, I as a public health director control directly. So, you know, I'm not in charge of transportation policy for the state. Now, to date, we've had very little or no voice in determining transportation policy, but I think where we need to get to is where we're at the table in a real way. And, you know, it's not going to be just a health decision, but it ought to be at least partly a health decision. We need some new infrastructure to do that, and almost more important than specific skills, we need somebody or some group of people tagged with doing that. At the Health Authority, I know we've had some internal discussions about whether we should have a unit that's involved in this kind of health in all policies arena that would be specifically tasked with being a liaison to all of these other agencies. So, you know, at the state level, I think that's those are two ways that I think we could move that agenda forward, recognizing that it's a we're going to have a little bit of an indirect effect on a lot of those issues and policies.
Interesting arrangement.
Sorry.
That's a great, that's really a great question. Looking at local public health, the county health rankings came out in February, and I don't know how many of you are familiar with those, but if you look at what they measured, the social determinants of health, in fact, were in there. Medical care was really a small sliver. It was really weighted toward high school graduation rates and income and housing and poverty. And having that information specific to our counties at the local level, part of what we have been doing is making the rounds within our communities, speaking to various groups to shine some light on these county health rankings, and including how did those get, what were the measures, and what do they mean, and how do they contribute to health? So while I can't move those needles, I can influence that with local partners by sharing that information, by explaining if you're the high school teacher, your graduation rate makes a difference in terms of health in our communities. Really trying to make those connections. So convening people locally, explaining the data, and then coming up with local action plans. So I think that that is a piece that we can do. The slide that talked about aligning funds to the policy outcomes or and behavioral outcomes and the health outcomes that we want is really one of the takeaways I'd like you to have from what we presented at the first part of the slides this morning, because local public health is primarily funded around services as opposed to this kind of work, with the exception of county general fund. So that county general fund piece is a place where I can leverage and decide where that goes, as can the other administrators in Oregon. It is that flexible piece and a very, very key piece.
I can't help myself. I want to stay in role as the liaison here, but I think I would just add one thing to what Mel said, wanted to mention. Health in all policies, but health and equity in all policies. Mm-hmm. And I think that's really important because while we have responsibility for all of the citizens in our jurisdiction, if we're worried about return on investment and where to put the first dime to make a difference for a healthier community, we have to really understand, you know, where those disparities are so that we can use our limited resources in a way that will make the biggest change for whether it is a policy around parks or, you know, it's access to screenings and healthcare. So I just add that slight amendment.
I agree.
Well, given what Lillian just said, and I agree, but I'm going to be deliberately provocative.
Oh, what a surprise!
This is Larry Wallen. You can't really have parallel systems. So you have transportation going along and housing going along, and the notion is that maybe they'll start to converge at some point down the line, but in fact, they're not going to converge. In fact, in some areas, they're going to become more divergent. So to me, and we talked about this last meeting, what's really different about what we're doing? We're talking a lot about rationalizing a system that has been marginally effective because the problems are overwhelming the resources. So we're talking about how do we make that more efficient, but we're not going to solve the problem. I mean, it's truly a downstream approach to trying to make this kind of system more efficient. So it strikes me that somebody has to take a risk where they write a report. Some committee has to write a report that goes to whoever our report is going to, the governor or whoever, and their first response is, this report doesn't make any sense. It's not what they were supposed to do. Somebody needs to take that risk. And to my mind, the risk that we would need to take is we would need to get the word health out of our head. And we would need to say, what are five public policies that we would recommend that would create a better society for everybody? So one of them might be around transportation, one would be around housing, one would be around education, and so forth. Because when you put up that definition about public health, a lot of the stuff that you said that followed it didn't go back to the definition. Because you said what the purpose of public health or the mission of public health is to ensure the conditions in which people can be healthy. But then you talked about risk factors and things like that. The conditions in which people are going to be healthy, and that 1988 definition is a very radical statement. Because the conditions are the fundamental building blocks of opportunity in the society. So again, if we wanted to be adventuresome, if we really wanted to do our job, we would have to risk the fact that the people we're doing the job for come back to us and say, you guys failed us. Because they would say that because they don't understand that we're actually ahead of them rather than behind them.
Is there a question in that?
And what do you think about that?
No comment.
Wouldn't you agree with that? No, I mean, I think it's a real challenge because the point is, my question to you is, how do we bust out of this thing? How do we really do something different that sends a message that all of the rationalization, I mean that in a positive way, efficiency and so forth, isn't going to really change the big outcome that we're trying to achieve?
You know, I guess, Larry, I would have one reaction to what you say.
Just one
I'm going to say, yeah, in public anyway. I fear that approach a little bit. And what I fear about it is that our credibility is based around health. And when we start into this other realm without reference to the health, putting health out of our minds and out of our statements, I think we risk people looking at us and saying, get your nose out of our business, you have no business being here. So
that's a leadership position somebody has to take. And that's the lesson from the social determinants of health research. You know, there's now 10, in the modern era, we've got 10 or 15 or even 20 years of research in this area, which says why our no should be in there. And it's a fundamental leadership position that hasn't been taken, because organizationally, we are all constrained because of the boxes that, you know, the categorical ways we go about things.
So I'd
just like to make sure that everyone has a chance to ask questions, and I see a couple people making signals that they would like to say something.
It's always hard to follow Larry, but here's a concrete question. What is the per capita, per head funding for public health in Oregon as compared to other states? And can you also kind of give us a sense of that big variation of some states being very generous or some counties being very generous versus some counties not, and how that affects health or how it affects that, what the public health departments can do?
I can talk a little bit about the county general fund piece. It, like I said, it varies widely, and it's hard to measure because we do different things. And we report the money a little bit different. When we look at this, I think it is a piece of data we need to pursue, so I appreciate that that question and pull out those variables so we can make some sense out of it. If you look across at least the counties here in Oregon, counties that put at least $5 to $9 per capita of county general fund in their counties, and there's a range there because of the way we report and doing different things. Those are counties that do better around local public health. You get much below that and they really struggle. If they've gone below that and they're struggling and they get above that, you can see them improve. So that's sort of an oblique answer there. And on the state general fund, I think we're fourth from the bottom in terms of how we compare.
The national data I've seen puts Oregon 41st in terms of state investment in public health. A lot of methodological questions about what's counted and what's not in that, but we're not anywhere near the top, let's put it that way. And, you know, I think we do have that global number that you asked for. I don't have it off the top of my head, but we can get that back to the committee.
Let's see, could we, there's Lori, could, who's Lori? And then Rhonda and Susan.
And then, and that should be it, I think.
Just briefly, and this is just a follow-up, Keith, to what you were saying, I think it's important, too, in particular when we talk about county-level funding for public health, that's a really large category. Mm-hmm. And so which programs or which emphasis or which practice within public health is also critical to look at, specifically speaking from Lane County, chronic disease prevention gets zero general fund dollars from the county budget to support the work. So I think it's important. Public health covers an awful lot of services and focus areas, and for the purposes of the kind of work that we're talking about, I think it's important to tease out which components of public health, for instance, chronic disease prevention, tobacco, obesity, that we're talking about when we're looking at the allocation of resources.
So I have a quick question for the committee, which is, is that a bike rack issue? Would people like to get more data on, specifically on funding?
And I'd like not just data, but to just sort of talk about what are the political drivers that create that system, those allocations, those norms at the county level, and why that's how we're operating.
Lori, that was exactly what I was referring to in my slide about addressing the leading causes of morbidity and mortality. We're not investing our dollars across the system in that way.
But sometimes it sounds like we are, if we say we're giving this much to public health.
That's right.
Okay, this is Susan Pikeman. This is a follow-up with Larry's comment. So we've talked not only about social determinants of health, but also the, you know, different silos in which we all exist. And so my question for you speakers is, how much of a discussion is there? I'm a transportation person, so we have the Oregon Transportation Commission, which is in charge of ODOT. So my question for you is, with the Oregon Health Policy Board, which I assume is a similar structure, how much of a conversation is there of those higher level gubernatorial boards and communicating with each other, and then also the consideration of putting somebody from health on the Oregon Transportation Commission, and likewise along with, you know, housing and the sorts. Does that make sense?
Yeah, I don't know the answer to your question. I mean, I think that is a question for the health authority and where they strategically invest their kind of capital of resources. I do think that there is more possibility on the local level. I mean, we've had a lot of support locally with not the Oregon Department of Transportation, but the Portland Department of Transportation, the Gresham Planning Committee. You know, it's easier, I think, to develop those relationships on the local level. And that, I think the challenge to local public health is, how do you have an agenda that is consistent, you know, with non-governmental partners, governmental partners, and that we work on, like, managing up. I mean, I know in Multnomah County we've been able to, in some areas, have influence because, you know, we pull together, you know, we've taken the lead of other organizations. You have somebody on your committee, for instance, you know, the Coalition for Livable Futures, you know, used their agenda to kind of pull it in and get the governmental partners lined up behind it. And then that puts pressure, I think, on the state.
Can I just add to that? Before we would want to participate in those committees, we have a lot of work to do. We don't speak their language, We don't know what the processes are, by and large, I'm speaking. And so I think there's a real workforce development piece here. We have to have the right skills. Otherwise, we'll shoot ourselves in the foot when we get entree to those decision-making places.
No, and actually, that's kind of my point, is that I agree that there's this different languages spoken between, and that's one of the significant conversations that we have, is the fact that we've been siloed in our language, and there's no intercommunication between. And so, actually, I believe my question would be, what do you think of the likelihood of success or a policy recommendation that there is integration among those higher level committees?
I think it's certainly worth putting out there. So if that's a statement about likelihood of success, I don't know, but.
My name is Rhonda Busick, and this question is going to make sense knowing that I'm from a fully capitated health plan. And I will not be near as provocative as Larry, and I'll say that right now. But one of the questions, and I've actually been cheating with notes over here with Keith every once in a while, is that what's intriguing to me is, where's the interface with the actual medical system between public health and the medical system? Because one of the things I know we've learned in Lane County over time is, you know, we offer chronic care prevention as a medical plan. We offer prenatal care as a medical plan. We, our primary care, do chronic care management in their offices. They have their programs they offer by groups. And it wasn't until I started talking to our health department, we realized not only were we stepping on each other, but we were duplicating services because they were trying to reach out to our members with prenatal health and maternity management. We're required by contract to provide those. And so I'm kind of curious about, and I wonder if that's not one of our recommendations, is what is the interface with the actual medical system? And where is the duplication occurring? And you will certainly can take that as a question.
Thank you, it's a great question. And duplication doesn't help any of us. I know that in a variety of counties that there are task forces around particular areas of care. I'll use prenatal care as an example because I can speak to that in my county, where we bring the health plans and hospitals together. It's usually 3 to 4 times a year, and have those discussions. Not only what are we covering, who are we covering, how do we not duplicate services, and how do we all step up to cover those without access? And so I think those discussions, at least on the local level, are easier to have happen. Is that consistent across all of the jurisdictions in Oregon? Probably not. I think that's a really important piece as we look at the system and how we get the most service for the dollars that are available on the table. And I think that there's a particular challenge to local public health around all of this in terms of what is our role, what are those clinical pieces that Mel and Lillian mentioned, and what is that interface and how does that look? I think that's really an important piece with more to come.
You know, I don't think this is as radical as what Larry was saying, but I do think it's going to take courage.
Yeah.
Number one. Number two, I would like to see, maybe this is, I'm going to just throw this out, okay, but what if your work demanded that all primary and secondary prevention be covered by insurers? And in the exchange, I mean, right now we don't have everybody covered, but by 2015 we're supposed to have these exchanges and subsidies, and people up to 400% of poverty are going to get exchange. You know, if you don't have insurance, you're going to be able to buy in, and all, you know, all that other really complicated stuff. You know, and like demand that the incentives and outcomes committee, which is really about payment reform, that they include that, and then public health doesn't worry about it. What we have to do is make sure it's happening. You know, have the data, be able to track it, you know, and stuff. But just get out of the business in a way that holds accountability to the people who have the dollars, who say they are doing the services, but really have some teeth in the accountability.
So I want to real quickly touch base. Don, this is Ursula. Do you have a question?
No, I'm just trying to figure out the issue between the dramatic statement and whether that, though it may be dramatic, will in fact impact healthcare. I think the statement needs to be made. But how we, on the other hand, do what is doable and not, and how we combine those two, and that's quite frankly where my mind has been going. And I would agree with the last statement too, that it is an issue of how do we create those incentives and say that this is part of how we provide health care. It is not simply treating problems, but it is addressing some of those issues that lead, and as the earlier comments, you know, moving upstream as the way that we're going to actually address in the long term the health care cost rises. So I am listening very carefully, but trying to think through how these pieces fit together and how they fit together in a set of recommendations that in fact do not ignore critical issues, but on the other hand can be assured that we can move things forward. I mean, there is clearly a part of me that, you know, wants to raise my fist and say, let the revolution begin. But I don't think we're going to lead that revolution.
Okay. Thanks. I think we might just do one more, or if somebody's burning questions.
Well,
otherwise, we should.
We really are 10 minutes over for this discussion.
I just wanted to clarify one thing. First of all, that's a great statement about moving upstream. And we do have great leadership, great public health leadership. And we heard some of that this morning. And that's all I'm saying is you guys need to lead the charge upstream. Not that we're going to drop everything and do that, but that's our aspiration. That's our North Star. And who was that on the phone?
Don.
I think, you know, Don's use of the upstream metaphor, we need to make sure we're moving upstream constantly, and we have the leadership to do that, but you need to push us, and we need to push you. But we can't just stay downstream or midstream. We've got to go upstream. But we're not going to get all the way up there on this committee. I was deliberately pushing us that way because we want to be doing everything we can to move in that direction. But we have the leadership.
So I'm going to take...
And I would agree with that.
I'm going to take Gail's question because she waited patiently and she was one of the first to queue up. And then we do need to move along because we need to have that... rich dialogue among ourselves from what we've learned from what Lillian and Mel and Kathleen have shared with us. So, Gail, go ahead.
This is Gail Evans. It's kind of a practical question related to our upcoming discussion on funding. Can any of you speak to what or how the state waiver provision of federal reform plays into our thinking and funding and timelines and the direction we're going? Because that seems like a little bit of a wild card to me.
Are you referring to a waiver for some specific waiver, or you're sort of asking about federal constraints on
Senator Wyden put in a provision to allow for state waivers because we're ahead of other states in many ways. So has anybody looked at what does that mean for this work and the funding discussion we're going to have?
You know, yeah, that's a long answer. I'm just going to say yes.
It's complicated.
Yeah, but yes, there's like groups of people working on it. So, good call.
Could I just make one comment about this interaction between the healthcare system and, you know, some of these more community-based public health things? A lot of this is about mindset, in my experience, and I really like the way you framed it as courage, Lillian, because there's some risk involved there. My experience on the public health side is that, you know, we often get asked for a lot from the clinical community. We want guidelines, we want funding, we want data. But when we talk about the things flowing in the other direction, well, public health needs support for building the data systems to give you what you need, or some of these other kinds of things. It's very, very difficult. So part of the transformation that has to happen is a change in mindset and us having the courage to step out together and own the health issues.
Okay.
it's much more push and pull. And frankly, on the public health side, we've been on the losing end of that for a very, very long time. That's why our funding looks like the way it does it. Many, many specific examples of that I could give you. So that's going to be a real challenge moving forward constructively for us, and it is going to take leadership around that.
So I'm going to turn it over to Ursula at this point, and I want to thank you, though, Alejandro, for kind of pushing on the questions. When we work on designing the agendas, we're designing them in hopes that it'll move us in a really strategic direction, and but your thinking and your contribution is far greater than our pre-thinking. So I appreciate that push.
I actually hate to interrupt this, and want to thank each of you for a rich presentation and a good launching discussion, and it's too bad that we have to cut it off, actually, in a way, but not totally cut it off, because what's coming around are small group instructions to help guide your conversation about funding. And I have almost wanted to put funding in quotes, because it's a bit of resource allocation. It might not be dollars, or it may be dollars that you generate in other ways, or you, I mean, for example, at the last meeting, there was a lot of conversation about linking economic development and health. And so use that term both specifically, and if your conversation discussion leads you in that way, a little more loosely, okay? While that's coming around, I've actually taken the liberties this time of assigning you to a group to get a little bit of diversity of perspectives and sort of place in the world. So as that comes around, let me just tell you real quickly, I've got a group that I'm calling A, which is Paul, Alejandro, Susan, Lori, and Sally. A group that I'm calling B, which is Larry, Gail, Daniel, Lila, Jill, and Ginny. And there's a group C, which is Chris, Sansere, Laura, Jared, and Heidi. And a group D, which is Rhonda, Rachel, Cheryl, Keith, and Don by phone. So group D should meet somewhere here where we can just move the phone over to you. And Katrina's not on the phone, I think, so she's off there. And Cheryl is not here yet, so that group is smaller. I want to let also our guests know that you're welcome to sit here and listen in on any one of the groups that you'd like to listen in, or you can take it as a break, as you wish. So real quickly, the purpose of the small groups is to do two things. One is to start to begin to try to formulate in a very preliminary way, but begin to formulate what some of your recommendations might be around that would guide the funding, not specific dollar amounts, obviously, but what would guide the funding of this health improvement plan, and to identify other information that you need to have that would be useful for you, okay, in this process. I'd like you to start by assigning your self-management roles. Some of you have participated in this before. If you go to the back of this, there's a discussion leader, a timekeeper, a recorder, and a reporter. And it's just a matter of seeing who's willing to do what. That helps keep your group on task, which will be important given the time frame. I'd like you to start your group by actually giving yourselves a little individual time to think about what are the most important principles around funding. And I've just given you a couple of examples that are drawn from your own conversations, like sustainability or being able to measure the return. Those are just examples of principles, so you have a feel for what I'm talking about there. And I'd like you to think about what types of strategies you might employ to support areas of the plan that would be priorities. You've talked about a sugar tax. You've talked about a totally different way of, as I said, of linking economic development and linking it to the built environment and therefore to health. So whatever sort of larger strategies you want the group to start thinking about. I'd like you to use nominal group. Part of the reason for doing small group is so everybody gets heard. Okay, so first start by going around the group, share your ideas, do it one by one. So you list one idea and for each of, you know, a principle and a priority or a strategy. And then also as you're doing that, take note, if somebody has just said something you really support, just say, I really support that. Recorder can put an asterisk or a hatch mark or something there. So you can begin to see where you have some consensus or some agreement, and where you have really a wide range of ideas possibly. I'm going to give you some flip chart paper once you're organized into groups, and you can record those ideas up on the flip chart. Once they're all up there, we want you to take some time to think about them, talk about them, see where you're in agreement, and I'm going to give you cards, and we're going to move this screen out of the way, and we'll post the cards from all the small groups up on there, and up on the wall, and then during lunch we'll group them, see where the themes are, really see what coalesces among the groups, okay? And if you have questions or areas that you'd like more information about, rather than reporting them back, we'd like you to put them on the bike rack at the back, okay? So when you're posting cards, if you have things for the bike rack, write them up there. I don't know, do we have post-its this time? Okay, just write them on the bike rack pages. That's just fine. Okay, so the reporter should be prepared to report back those things, that those principles or priorities or strategies where there was consensus. If you have a provocative idea, like Larry's, and there is a consensus in your group, I don't want people agonizing to get consensus. You can just put your idea on a card, put it up on the wall, and put an asterisk on it, and then when we're working it through, we'll say, okay, whose card is this? And you can talk about your idea. Okay? So, any questions?
Yes. This is just an operational one. And Kathleen, Lillian, Mel, Carlos, you're welcome to move into whichever group you would like. And Rhonda indicates that she needs to leave early for a DMAP hearing, so I'm wondering who you want to move from Group B to Group D.
Gail, would you move? Okay. So, why don't we have Group A? We can't obviously bust up Coley. Why don't we have Group A move in that corner? Group B over there. Group C, and then Group D where the phone can be here. So A, B, C, D, easy to figure out. And I do want to say obviously you may need to take a break, but this is really not the break. The break is at lunch, because we're behind. Some of you are going to have to run anyway.
Yeah.